Good evening, and welcome to the BVB London Fan Club podcast, episode number 10, How Time Flies When We're Having Fun. With me, as always, I have the president of the BVB London Fan Club, Ben McFadyen. Good evening, Ben.
Hello, El Presidente. That's me, I guess. Yeah, how are you doing, Mark? Thank you so much.
Yeah, very good. Here again. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to the show tonight. Another busy week. How about yourself?
It's been excellent. I've just been trying to get a car just running around from one dealer to the next. And I tell you what, you certainly learn a lot about people talking to used car salesmen.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it takes a certain type sometimes, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a busy week in football. Obviously, we've had obviously a lot more Bundesliga action. The title has been decided in Germany. We've had the resumption of the Premier League in England. And I think there's actually games going on as we speak at the moment in the Premier League. And also an announcement around European football as well, with the Champions League announcement around the format and the Europa League also. So, and then with BVB, we've had two matches. The first one at the weekend just gone against Dusseldorf, which turned out to be a good result for us. Did you guys catch that game?
I was just going to say, where's Nick in all of this? Nick Wildhagen, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here again. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, I did catch some of the action against Dusseldorf. Obviously, important game for my team, Werder Bremen as well. And a certain Norwegian stuck his head out, got the winner towards the end there. So yeah, that was a great result. But the result that followed on Wednesday wasn't great for neither Borussia Dortmund nor for Werder Bremen in particular.
No, absolutely. And apologies, Nick. I was going to sort of bring you in there and just sort of mention that obviously you're a football journalist, which we know, and you've contributed to the Metro in the UK and editor at Bundesliga Fanatic, and also a regular presenter on Talking Fussball. So, and we're looking forward to picking your brains this evening around the subject of former champions and cult clubs in German football. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun uncovering some of those this evening.
It's one of my favourite topics, so we could be here all night.
One of the sides that unfortunately has been very much in the news in the past week or so has been Kaiserslautern. Do you want to bring us up to speed with the situation at Kaiserslautern and perhaps give us a little bit of history around them?
Well, Kaiserslautern, to start off with the history bit, Kaiserslautern have always been the side which is loved regionally in Rheinland-Pfalz, part of Germany. There's really no other team in that part of Germany that has can claim any sort of greatness to its name, at least not to the level of Kaiserslautern. So Kaiserslautern has had fans all around that part of Germany for years and years and years. And the achievements of that club, they range back to championships back in the 50s. They had the legendary Walter brothers, particular Fritz Walter, who was Sepp Herberger's favorite player, German international coach Sepp Herberger, who coached the German national team after the Second World War and got them that win in that legendary final in Bern in 1954, where Fritz Walter obviously played an influential role, and there were actually a number of other Kaiserslautern players on that pitch. I think it was five players from Kaiserslautern in that starting lineup, if I'm not mistaken. So Kaiserslautern, they have a certain ring to their name. They've won the Bundesliga title three times. They're actually the only team that has managed the feat of being promoted one season and winning the championship the next season. That's only been done once in Bundesliga history, and Kaiserslautern are the team that have done it. They did so under Otto Rehagel back in 98. But ever since, Kaiserslautern sort of have been facing financial trouble. The starting point many people point to is the fact that they had to rebuild the Betzenberg, the legendary stadium, in order to fit the criteria for the World Cup in 2006. So that is a really nice stadium, which is on sort of a top of a hill, which overlooks the city. So it's sort of like a mighty sight when you get there, I've been told, when you're at the bottom of that hill and you just see those massive floodlights. And the stadium is state-of-the-art. I mean, it was modernized for the 2006 World Cup, but, you know, the financial burden was too much to carry for the side, which at one point then became sort of what the Germans call an elevator team. So they sort of variated between the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2. And last season, they actually fell down to the third tier. And, you know, they've been begging and begging the city to lower the rents for the stadium because obviously they couldn't keep hold of the stadium, owning it themselves because they were in too much financial trouble. And, you know, at the end of the day, they now went into receivership because their finances are a mess. They have brought in an owner from Luxembourg, a guy who bought a lot of shares, but obviously cannot hold the majority of the shares because the 50+1 rule prevents them from doing so. So it's all a big mess where you have the club, the city, who have sort of been at each other's throats at times over the last decade or so. Because, I mean, Kaiserslautern, the city, is actually not that rich, but they had to do stuff like increasing the taxes for garbage collections because they actually decided to lower the rent for the stadium and stuff like that, which wasn't maybe particularly popular among certain voters. So it's all really a big mess, and they are the former German greats with three Bundesliga titles to their name, the Walter brothers. They are actually in deep, deep trouble. But from what I understand, the sort of receivership they've gone into allows them to stay in the third tier next season as well and sort their finances out. But we'll have to see what that means in terms of the players they can hold on to and that. We already know that they've sold their best three players to sides in the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 already. So more of that to come, I would imagine.
Indeed. Yeah. And I certainly have amazing memories of SFC Kaiserslautern. Obviously, I had a season ticket from mid-80s to early 90s in Dortmund, and watching Kaiserslautern, always really a top team. I mean, just looking at, 1991, when they won the Meisterschaft, and as you said, in 98 as well, but also the Vize-Meisterschaft, this, you know, second place in 93, 94. And they were a very solid side, also winning the DFB Pokal in 89 was, of course, Dortmund. So it was 90 that they won it. So pretty remarkable. The Fritz Walter Stadium that you mentioned has a capacity of 50,000, which is, you know, certainly in English terms, Mark, would be a very impressive stadium, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, 50,000 capacity stadiums in England, you know, there still aren't that many, actually. You look at a lot of the big sides, obviously, do. But once you step outside of there, that's rare, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about some of the great players of Erste FC Kaiserslautern in the 1980s and 90s. I remember Andreas Bremer, Nick. He played there, didn't he? Was that right?
He played there. Yeah, he played there in the 80s and got back into Kaiserslautern in the 90s. Obviously, the man who converted the penalty that won Germany the 1990 World Cup in Italy.
Another favorite of mine was Hans-Peter Briegel.
Yes, another player who also went to Italy. He went actually to Hellas Verona. I think there's actually a fan friendship between Kaiserslautern fans and Hellas Verona because of Briegel, because a lot of Kaiserslautern fans actually went down to see him play for Hellas Verona. And if you haven't heard of Hellas Verona, I just read Tim Park's book about a season with their fans. It's absolutely amazing. Great. A few other players from the 90s we could mention. Harry Koch, the guy with the most fantastic hairdo in German football ever.
There's been a few.
Obviously, they had a very solid Czech defender in Miroslav Kalvic, who I liked a lot. And towards the end of the 90s, obviously, there was a certain Miroslav Klose who was sort of picked up for the second team because the funny thing is, the Klose was actually picked up for the second team because the striker they actually wanted to sign had signed for another side because Kaiserslautern waited too long to sign him. And in the end, Miroslav Klose became the most scoring player in World Cup history. And, you know, he was in his early 20s, but, you know, he was sort of still working on the side. And it's funny how stuff can sort of snowball, because at that given point in his career, Miroslav Klose was very happy to play for the second side of Kaiserslautern because that was sort of the pinnacle of his career at that stage, because he had been to some talent sightings and been found not good enough to you know join academies for Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 sides.
Amazing.
And a few other players top of my head. Mario Basler played there.
Yeah. Mario Basler, he had his real peak, I think, with FC Bayern München. Another player I enjoyed a lot was Ehrenfeld, who was a superb goalkeeper at...
goalkeeping coach who actually has gone on to bring out keepers such as Kevin Trapp, Tim Wiese. He actually was fired from Kaiserslautern this season. I mean, he had a, you know, he's been at the club for a long, long time, and he had, you know, his goalkeeping school has been famous because, of, as I said, has brought out a lot of decent and brilliant keepers and.
Yes, that's right. Roman Weidenfeller, of course.
Roman Weidenfeller as well, yes.
Do you feel that Stefan Kuntz was probably one of their best ever players, who was there from 89 to 95, scoring 75 goals in just 170 appearances? I mean, Stefan Kuntz, for me, I always associate him with... Last week we had Delron Buckley on the show, and he talked about Kuntz at Bochum. But I've always felt that Lautern was Kuntz's real highlight. That was really his. That was the team where he really made the biggest impact. Of course, winning the championship with Lautern and so on. Great player, Stefan Kuntz, and a good manager too.
Well, and the man with the funniest last name in football, obviously.
Sorry, it took me a while to get that. Mark, I think you got it already. We won't need to explain.
No, I think I can comprehend. I mean, one of the things that strikes me as well with Kaiserslautern and you chaps would be able to sort of... How quick would you describe the fall of the team? Because I remember Kaiserslautern being a, you know, not just a strong team in Germany, but a strong team in Europe as well. I mean, they got to, if I'm right in saying, didn't they get to the quarterfinals of the European Cup or what is the Champions League now? And I think in the UEFA Cup, they did very well as well, maybe semi-finalists. And from an English perspective, I think they were one of the German sides that we'd sort of look out for regularly on a European night. But to sort of go from that sort of that height of football then to where they are now, it seems to have been quite some drop.
Yeah, it has been. It's sort of a perfect storm of coincidences and the wrong people at the wrong place at the wrong time, and that going on for years and years. And obviously, a lot of infighting within the club, a lot of chaos, and no real leadership or stable leadership, more like Donald Trump-like leadership in terms of the, you know, personnel overturn. And I mean, you said Stefan Kuntz, a great manager. Kaiserslautern fans actually blame him for, you know, running the club's finances into a miserable state, which they are suffering from now. I mean, it's sort of like when a club takes chances year in and year out, and you can see that at Schalke now as well, by the way, is that when you budget for Champions League football every season and you don't go to the Champions League, as Schalke haven't done in a while, you actually run massive deficits. And, you know, Kaiserslautern sort of always budgeted a bit too much to really bringing in the wrong players. And as I said, you know, Miroslav Klose being discovered was just a very lucky coincidence. So they sort of, you know, they besides that, they haven't had an awful lot of luck with their personal decisions over the years, ever since.
Yeah, I take your point, although I must point out to my defense that Kuntz was actually chairman of the board of Kaiserslautern, not manager. And I was really thinking of him more as the coach of the Germany under 21 team, which won the 2017 European Championship. He's always been a great leader, Kuntz, in German football for me. I mean, I certainly remember him playing for Germany in the Euro 96 and so on, which was a great team. I've interviewed Jörg Heinrich, who also played in that team. And but yeah, I do take your point that he has come and gone a couple of times at Lautern, and he's certainly been controversial. And I totally agree with you about the club, basically, a bit like Nottingham Forest in England, which Mark can comment on, has certainly been a very controversial the way they've run things. And it just seems remarkable, as you say, an area where, you know, there aren't that many big clubs in the Pfalz region. Perhaps, correct me if I'm wrong, but perhaps Mainz is not too far from there. But again, they only have a stadium of 20,000. Lautern are just a massively much bigger club than Mainz, in my view.
Perhaps Leeds United might be quite a good comparison to Kaiserslautern to a degree.
So what Kaiserslautern needs is to hire Marcelo Bielsa.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Sort it out.
Who's going to pay for that?
I don't know. Upping the garbage tax again by, I don't know, 150-250%.
Should do the job.
Well, I, as we talked about on the show about Portsmouth FC, I really believe in the 50+1, even though BVB is a Aktiengesellschaft. But I do think your analogy there, Mark, is good with Leeds United and the 1990s and so on, when they got to the Champions League semi-final and then crashed all the way down to the League One they crashed down to, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
they got down to the third tier, I think, and then obviously you know, they've always been they're a big city side, fantastic support, and that's the sort of the lightning with Kaiserslautern, perhaps, that the stadium's always been around about a 40,000 type stadium, and a club that everyone's considered should be in the top flight of English football, without doubt. Finally, you know, they look as though under Bielsa that they're finally going to do it and get back. And they've been flouncing with it for some time.
But coming back to Lautern, basically, I was just saying that they were in the 98-99 quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup, and as Mark said, made quite an impression at the time. And have been known to be a very strong team with a wonderful following, very similar to the Südtribüne in terms of the atmosphere, the Betzenberg and so on, very much feared. The Roten Teufel, the Red Devils of the Betzenberg, being their nickname. And Mark made a great analogy with Leeds United and their crash down to League One, which I think is very fitting. I remember Ken Bates took over Leeds United. I can't remember whether it wasn't actually under his watch that they collapsed, but I think it's really what the real question for me, at least, I don't know if you guys agree, is whether there are real systemic weaknesses in the German football pyramid at the moment. It's certainly something I would like to kind of throw in there. But by the way, just before we jump onto that subject, Lothar Huber, who scored the goal that took Dortmund up in 76 out of the Zweite Liga into the first, was a former Kaiserslautern player. And I met him a few times. Absolutely brilliant bloke. Do you remember the moustache? Fantastic Lothar Huber moustache. Flanken God.
He went on crosses.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, at the moment we're looking at various different teams. You mentioned a couple earlier on. Wattenscheid 09, of course, the former Bundesliga club, went bankrupt about 6 months ago and are now starting again in the fifth tier. And then this week we've heard that Lautern going into receivership, but also Wuppertaler SV, another classic club of the West region, having strong financial problems. Do you think this is more to do with general systemic weaknesses? I remember, I'm just going to throw one last thing in of my little monologue, but the controversy last year around the Chinese Olympic team playing in the Regionalliga Südwest, which I don't know what Mark feels about that, but to me it was astonishing that the teams in the German fourth tier in that particular region, as you said, it's divided into five, were given 50,000 euros each to allow the Chinese Olympic team to play in their league. Admittedly, it was only somehow for one season, but I just found it made a Mickey Mouse of the whole kind of German football system in a way, I have to be honest. Maybe that's unfair.
Well, I mean, there were protests, and in the end, that team was withdrawn. But yeah, it sort of shows that these clubs are really working on a knife's edge, financially speaking. Because in terms of the money, you want to be in the Bundesliga too, at least. The TV deal for the Dritte Liga is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, those matches are broadcasted nationally. But the clubs really don't make an awful lot from those TV matches. They actually make more from cup matches if they have a decent run into the cup. So that leaves you with the gate money, basically. Gate and merch. And that is sort of very differing for many clubs. I mean, Kaiserslautern can generate a good amount. Or does Essen can generate decent amounts down there in the fourth tier. But then you have, you know, clubs like Chemnitz FC, clubs that come from weaker economic regions, or clubs that simply don't manage to get people to their matches because they come from small places. For them, the ultimate goal is to get up to the Bundesliga 2 to make money. But obviously not all 20 clubs in the Dritte Liga can go up. Not all 20 clubs in a regional division can go up. And if you year in and year out are, you know, sort of trying to push the boundaries of what's financially possible, you end up in a situation where Kaiserslautern is...
You know, just putting it into context, Nick raised the issue of the TV deal. So the Drittliga clubs, the third tier in Germany, they get 1.2 million per team per season for the Drittliga TV money. And we were just talking about the Chinese Olympic team taking part in the 2018-19 season. And as Nick said, due to protests, especially regarding Tibet, but also certain teams like Waldhof Mannheim refusing to play against them altogether. How does that strike you as a major English football fan? The idea of the Chinese Olympic team taking part in professional football in England, can you imagine that happening here?
I find it probably the most preposterous thing I've ever heard, actually. I can't believe it to a certain degree.
It's preposterous until it happens. I mean,
sure, exactly. But it's just.
I mean, who would have imagined that Drew Alexandrovich would host a match between Northern Ireland and Qatar on sort of like a tour of Qatar,
sure,
trying to make themselves palatable as a host of the 22 World Cup. So I mean, fabled side like Drew Alexandrovich, great club, great history, and.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunately, money talks, doesn't it? And there's no getting away from it. And it's 50, just
50,000 euros is a lot of money for Regionalliga. So I mean, that basically pays the wages for a month.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who wants to pass out? I mean, what Bundesliga side would? I mean, if Bayern got a deal to play this one match and we pay all your players' wages for a month, which at Bayern is several million euros if they get those 10, 15 million euros. I say, oh, and the team is from Saudi Arabia, by the way. Would they do it? Of course they would. Yeah. I mean, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge would be the first man to step out and say, football has bettered the situation of human rights in Saudi Arabia, and don't think he wouldn't do it. I mean, he's done the same with Qatar.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's a really good point, because I think, you know, probably from an English perspective, we sort of paint Germany in a very good light, I think, at the moment, but particularly because of the 50+1 rule, and I think we're very fond of that and what it stands for. However, you know, it's not to say that money doesn't play a huge part in German football, and I think perhaps in England maybe we actually forget that sometimes, and not just in German football, but across the world, where other clubs are, you know, mainly member owned as well. I mean, you know, lots of big clubs, for example, in Spain have associations with, you know, with Qatar, etc., and the money ultimately talks, doesn't it? And it's a funny situation, and you know, we beat ourselves up in England all the time because we have, I suppose, a little bit like the NFL and the American Football League game. That's what the Premier League feels like now. It's just like these big billionaire owners walking around, and this is my team and this is my baby sort of thing. And I think in England, we've started to sort of really rebel against that, and we feel quite uncomfortable with it, particularly when we look across at Germany. But across the world, ultimately, you know, if clubs need the money, then I guess they're going to go and find it, aren't they?
It's been really interesting. Thank you, guys. I found it really fascinating. We've covered weaknesses and also challenges of football at the moment, and then obviously talked about Wattenscheid 09 and Erste FC Kaiserslautern and the financial difficulties going on and potential systemic weaknesses in German football, which, although unexpected, are probably to do with what we, as Mark said, we really love, which is the fact that the clubs and the members have such a huge influence on the German football team because of 50+1. It's been a really interesting show, guys. And as usual, it would be great to get your social media links before we close off. But just a quick one for you, because Mark, you mentioned at the beginning of the show how we should always stay current and topical, which I hope you agree we have done to a large degree tonight. But tell me your predictions for Borussia Dortmund. Where are they going to end the season? I know, Nick, you're a Werder fan, but give it your best shot. Where do you see Dortmund finishing the season?
Well, I'm going to go second.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to go second. I think they have just enough to finish in front of the Soda Maniacs, and I'm not going to predict where it's going to end up that season because it's too sad.
I'm not going to say a single word. I'll just say your word in God's ear. Mark, if anybody wants to find you, where can we find you on social media?
Absolutely. The easiest way actually to get hold of me is to drop me a line on email. So I'm mark@sportslineuk.com. That's the easiest way to get hold of me.
And Nick, you're a Twitterati. We can find you on Twitter, I know.
Yes, you can. You can find me at Norm Musings on Twitter. And can find me on Talking Foosball every now and then. And have some things planned for this summer in terms of producing some content that we're going to debut at the start of next season. So stay tuned for that.
Sounds great. And I certainly enjoy the show with Matt Herman, the Talking Fußball, which I've been on once or twice, particularly around the 2017 20th anniversary of the 97 Munich 97 Dortmund's Champions League win. And I'm going to go with a second position for Dortmund as well. And as ever, you can find the Borussia Dortmund fan club on Facebook. Although we haven't been, our Facebook page hasn't been updated very much recently. So I just would say one thing. We have got a Stammtisch coming up for the DFB Pokal final on the 4th of July. So anybody who's up for a jar of Dortmunder Union beer, do come down to the Naughty Bar in Cleveland Street where we always meet and check out the mural there and watch the DFB Pokal final, which is a 7 p.m. kickoff. But should be an interesting final anyway. I always love the DFB Pokal. Right, guys, thank you so much. What a great show. Really, really cool to have you both on. And I will catch up with you guys very shortly. So thanks a lot and have a good rest of the weekend.
You too.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Borussia Dortmund.